Dune by Frank Herbert, continued. Gurney saw then the sinewy harshness in Paul that had never before been seen in an Atreides, a leathery look to the skin, a squint to the eyes, and calculation in the glance that seemed to weigh everything in sight.
"They said you were dead," Gurney repeated.
"And it seemed the best protection to let them think so," Paul said. Gurney realized that was all the apology he'd ever get for having been abandoned to his own resources, left to believe his young duke, his friend, was dead. He wondered then if there were anything left here of the boy he had known and trained in the ways of fighting men. Paul took a step closer to Gurney, found that his eyes were smarting. "Gurney!" It seemed to happen of itself, and they were embracing, pounding each other on the back, feeling the reassurance of solid flesh.
"You young pup! You young pup!" Gurney kept saying. And Paul, "Gurney, man! Gurney, man!"
Presently they stepped apart, looked at each other. Gurney took a deep breath.
"So you're why the Fremen have grown so wise in battle tactics. I might have known. They keep doing things I could have planned myself, if I'd only known."
He shook his head.
"If you'd only got word to me, lad, nothing would have stopped me. I'd have come a-running, and—"
A look in Paul's eyes stopped him, the hard, weighing stare. Gurney sighed.
"Sure, and there'd have been those who wondered why Gurney Halleck went a-running, and some would have done more than question. They'd have gone hunting for answers."
Paul nodded, glanced to the waiting Fremen around them, the looks of curious appraisal on the faces of the Fedaken. He turned from the death commandos back to Gurney. Finding his former swordmaster filled him with elation. He saw it as a good omen, a sign that he was on the course of the future where all was well.
"With Gurney at my side?"
Paul glanced down the ridge past the Fedaken, studied the smuggler crew who had come with Halleck.
"How do your men stand, Gurney?" he asked. "They're smugglers all," Gurney said. "They stand where the profit is."
"Little enough profit in our venture," Paul said, and he noted the subtle finger signal flashed to him by Gurney's right hand, the old hand code out of their past. There were men to fear and distrust in the smuggler crew. Paul pulled at his lip to indicate he understood, looked up at the men standing guard above them on the rocks. He saw Stilgar there. Memory of the unsolved problem with Stilgar cooled some of Paul's elation.
"Stilgar," he said, "this is Gurney Halleck, of whom you've heard me speak. My father's master of arms, one of the swordmasters who instructed me, an old friend. He can be trusted in any venture."
"I heard," Stilgar said. "You are his duke."
Paul stared at the dark visage above him, wondering at the reasons which had impelled Stilgar to say just that. His duke. There had been a strange, subtle intonation in Stilgar's voice, as though he would rather have said something else. And that wasn't like Stilgar, who was a leader of Fremen, a man who spoke his mind.
"My duke," Gurney thought. He looked anew at Paul. "Yes, with Leto dead, the title fell on Paul's shoulders."
The pattern of the Fremen war on Arrakis began to take on new shape in Gurney's mind.
"My duke!"
A place that had been dead within him began coming alive. Only part of his awareness focused on Paul's ordering the smuggler crew disarmed until they could be questioned. Gurney's mind returned to the command when he heard some of his men protesting. He shook his head, whirled.
"Are you men deaf?" he barked. "This is the rightful Duke of Arrakis! Do as he commands!"
Grumbling, the smugglers submitted. Paul moved up beside Gurney, spoke in a low voice.
"I'd not have expected you to walk into this trap, Gurney."
"I'm properly chastened," Gurney said.
"I'll wager yon patch of spice is little more than a sand grain's thickness, a bait to lure us."
"That's a wager you'd win," Paul said. He looked down at the men being disarmed.
"Are there any more of my father's men among your crew?"
"None. We are spread thin. There are few among the free traders. Most have spent their profits to leave this place."
"But you stayed."
"I stayed."
"Because Raban is here," Paul said.
"I thought I had nothing left but revenge," Gurney said.
An oddly chopped cry sounded from the ridgetop. Gurney looked up to see a Fremen waving his kerchief.
"A maker comes," Paul said.
He moved out to a point of rock with Gurney following, looked off to the southwest. The burrow mound of a worm could be seen in the middle distance, a dust-crowned track that cut directly through the dunes on a course toward the ridge.
"He's big enough," Paul said.
A clattering sound lifted from the factory crawler below them. It turned on its treads like a giant insect, lumbered toward the rocks.
"Too bad we couldn't have saved the carry-all," Paul said.
Gurney glanced at him, looked back to the patches of smoke and debris out on the desert where carry-all and ornithopters had been brought down by Fremen rockets. He felt a sudden pang for the men lost there, his men,
and he said, "Your father would have been more concerned for the men he couldn't save."
Paul shot a hard stare at him, lowered his gaze. Presently, he said, "They were your friends, Gurney. I understand. To us, though, they were trespassers who might see things they shouldn't see. You must understand that."
"I understand it well enough," Gurney said. "Now I'm curious to see what I shouldn't."
Paul looked up to see the old and well-remembered wolfish grin on Halleck's face, the ripple of the ink-vine scar along the man's jaw. Gurney nodded toward the desert below them. Fremen were going about their business all over the landscape. It struck him that none of them appeared worried by the approach of the worm. A thumping sounded from the open dunes beyond the baited patch of spice, a deep drumming that seemed to be heard through their feet. Gurney saw Fremen spread out across the sand there in the path of the worm. The worm came on like some great sandfish, cresting the surface, its rings rippling and twisting. In a moment, from his vantage point above the desert, Gurney saw the taking of a worm, the daring leap of the first hookman, the turning of the creature, the way an entire band of men went up the scaly, glistening curve of the worm's side.
"There's one of the things you shouldn't have seen," Paul said. "There's been stories and rumors," Gurney said, "but it's not a thing easy to believe without seeing it."
He shook his head.
"The creature all men on Arrakis fear, you treat it like a riding animal."
"You heard my father speak of desert power," Paul said. "There it is. The surface of this planet is ours. No storm, nor creature, nor condition can stop us."
"Us," Gurney thought. "He means the Fremen. He speaks of himself as one of them."
Again, Gurney looked at the spice blue in Paul's eyes. His own eyes, he knew, had a touch of the color, but smugglers could get off-world foods, and there was a subtle caste implication in the tone of the eyes among them. They spoke of the touch of the spice brush to mean a man had gone too native, and there was always a hint of distrust in the idea.
"There was a time when we did not ride the Maker in the light of day in these latitudes," Paul said, "but Raban has little enough air cover left that he can waste it looking for a few specks in the sand."
He looked at Gurney. "Your aircraft were a shock to us here."
"To us, to us."
Gurney shook his head to drive out such thoughts.
"We weren't the shock to you that you were to us," he said.
"What's the talk of Raban and the sinks and villages?" Paul asked.
"They say they fortified the Graben villages to the point where you cannot harm them. They say they need only sit inside their defenses while you wear yourselves out in futile attack."
"In a word," Paul said, "they're immobilized."
"While you can go where you will," Gurney said.
"It's a tactic I learned from you," Paul said. "They've lost the initiative, which means they've lost the war." Gurney smiled, a slow, knowing expression.
"Our enemy is exactly where I want him to be," Paul said. He glanced at Gurney. "Well, Gurney, do you enlist with me for the finish of this campaign?"
"Enlist?"
Gurney stared at him.
"My lord, I've never left your service. You're the only one left me, to think you dead. And I, being cast adrift, made what shrift I could, waiting for the moment I might sell my life for what it's worth. The death of Raban."
An embarrassed silence settled over Paul. A woman came climbing up the rocks toward them, her eyes between stillsuit hood and face mask flicking between Paul and his companion. She stopped in front of Paul. Gurney noted the possessive air about her, the way she stood close to Paul.
"Chani," Paul said, "this is Gurney Halleck. You've heard me speak of him."
She looked at Halleck, back to Paul.
"I have heard."
"Where did the men go on the Maker?" Paul asked.
"They but diverted it to give us time to save the equipment."
"Well, then..."
Paul broke off, sniffed the air.
"There's wind coming," Chani said.
A voice called out from the ridgetop above them.
"Ho there! The wind!"
Gurney saw a quickening of motion among the Fremen now, a rushing about and sense of hurry. A thing the worm had not ignited was brought about by fear of the wind. The factory crawler lumbered up onto the dry beach below them, and a way was opened for it among the rocks. And the rocks closed behind it so neatly that the passage escaped his eyes.
"Have you many such hiding places?" Gurney asked.
"Many times many," Paul said.
He looked at Chani.
"Find Korba. Tell him that Gurney has warned me there are men among this smuggler crew who are not to be trusted."
She looked once at Gurney, back to Paul, nodded, and was off down the rocks, leaping with a gazelle-like agility.
"She is your woman," Gurney said.
"The mother of my firstborn," Paul said. "There is another Leto among the Atreides."
Gurney accepted this with only a widening of the eyes. Paul watched the action around them with a critical eye. A curry color dominated the southern sky now,
and there came fitful bursts and gusts of wind that whipped dust around their heads. "Seal your suit," Paul said, and he fastened the mask and hood about his face. Gurney obeyed, thankful for the filters. Paul spoke, his voice muffled by the filter.
"Which of your crew don't you trust, Gurney?"
"There are some new recruits," Gurney said.
"Off-worlders."
He hesitated, wondering at himself suddenly.
"Off-worlders."
The word had come so easily to his tongue.
"Yes," Paul said. "They're not like the usual fortune-hunting lot we get," Gurney said. "They're tougher."
"Harkonnen spies?" Paul asked.
"I think, my lord, that they report to no Harkonnen. I suspect they're men of the Imperial Service. They have a hint of Seleucus Secundus about them."
Paul shot a sharp glance at him.
"Sardaukar?"
Gurney shrugged.
"They could be, but it's well masked."
Paul nodded, thinking how easily Gurney had fallen back into the pattern of Atreides' retainer, but with subtle reservations, differences. Arrakis had changed him, too. Two hooded Fremen emerged from the broken rock below them, began climbing upward. One of them carried a large black bundle over one shoulder.
"Where are my crew now?" Gurney asked.
"Secure in the rocks below us," Paul said. "We've a cave here, cave of birds. We'll decide what to do with them after the storm." A voice called from above them.
"Muad'Dib!"
Paul turned at the call, saw a Fremen guard motioning them down to the cave. Paul signaled he had heard. Gurney studied him with a new expression.
"You're Muad'Dib?" he asked. "You're the Will o' the Sand?"
"It's my Fremen name," Paul said. Gurney turned away, feeling an oppressive sense of foreboding. Half his own crew dead on the sand, the others captive. He did not care about the new recruits, the suspicious ones, but among the others were good men, friends, people for whom he felt responsible.
"We'll decide what to do with them after the storm."
That's what Paul had said, Muad'Dib had said. And Gurney recalled the stories told of Muad'Dib, the Lizan al-Ghaib, how he had taken the skin of a Harkonnen officer to make his drumheads, how he was surrounded by death commandos, Fedaken who leaped into battle with their death chants on their lips. Him. The two Fremen climbing up the rocks leaped lightly to a shelf in front of Paul. The dark-faced one said,
"All secure, Muad'Dib. We best get below now."
"Right." Gurney noted the tone of the man's voice, half-command and half-request. This was the man called Stilgar, another figure of the new Fremen legends. Paul looked at the bundle the other man carried, said,
"Korba, what's in the bundle?"
Stilgar answered,
"'Twas in the crawler. It had the initial of your friend here, and it contains a Baliset. Many times have I heard you speak of the prowess of Gurney Halleck on the Baliset."
Gurney studied the speaker, seeing the edge of black beard above the stillsuit mask, the hawk stare, the chiseled nose.
"You have a companion who thinks, my lord," Gurney said. "Thank you, Stilgar."
Stilgar signaled for his companion to pass the bundle to Gurney, said,
"Thank your lord duke. His countenance earns your admittance here."
Gurney accepted the bundle, puzzled by the hard undertones in this conversation. There was an air of challenge about the man, and Gurney wondered if it could be a feeling of jealousy in the Fremen. Here was someone called Gurney Halleck who'd known Paul even in the times before Arrakis, a man who shared a camaraderie that Stilgar could never invade.
"You are two I'd have be friends," Paul said.
"Stilgar, the Fremen, is a name of renown," Gurney said. "Any killer of Harkonnens I'd feel honored to count among my friends."
"Will you touch hands with my friend Gurney Halleck, Stilgar?" Paul asked.
Slowly, Stilgar extended his hand, gripped the heavy calluses of Gurney's sword hand.
"There are few who haven't heard the name of Gurney Halleck," he said, and released his grip.
He turned to Paul.
"The storm comes rushing."
"At once," Paul said. Stilgar turned away, led them down through the rocks, a twisting and turning path into a shadowed cleft that admitted them to the low entrance of a cave.